Today is Monday, June 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The search continues for those still missing after a Miami, Florida apartment building collapsed Friday.
We are working 24 hours a day, nonstop.
Plus a new warning from the World Health Organization about coronavirus variants.
Delta is the most transmissible of the variants identified so far.
And a newly restored area of the Roman Colosseum is opened to visitors. We'll have these stories and more next. Rescue crews in southern Florida continue scouring the rubble of a 12-story condominium building days after it collapsed. The death toll was raised to 9 on Sunday, and as VOA's Arash Arabasandi reports, time is running out for the roughly 150 people still missing.
The search continues in the southern Florida town of Surfside after Thursday's collapse of the 12-story complex. Scores remain missing, and Miami-Dade Mayor Daniela Levine Cava said at a news conference that authorities are now having frank conversations with family members still holding out hope for their loved ones. On Sunday, Surfside Mayor Charles Burkett sought to keep those hopes alive while speaking on ABC's This Week program.
We are working 24 hours a day, nonstop, nothing else on our mind, with the only objective of pulling their family members out of that rubble safely. That's what we're doing, and we are not going to stop doing that. Not today, not tomorrow, not the next day. We're going to keep going until everybody's out.
Rescue teams have been hampered by smoldering fires at the disaster site. Some have criticized the cautious pace of the effort. Outside the wreckage at a makeshift memorial, people gathered around a chain-link fence with names and pictures of those still missing. Mikel Noriega's grandmother is among them, and he tells AFP he has no choice but to remain hopeful.
This has been going on for days, so quite honestly, we don't know what to expect, but I can tell you that we're definitely very hopeful. We're holding on to faith, and we just believe that this is not over yet.
And while crews continue the search for survivors and the community sees an outpouring of international support, the Archdiocese of Miami held a prayer vigil calling for blessings and strength for the suffering families awaiting updates on their loved ones. Arash Arabasandi, VOA News.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has arrived in Italy, the final stop of his most recent European trip. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has been traveling with the secretary and told me that after arriving in Rome on Sunday, Blinken quickly went to work.
Right, Steve. Yes, Secretary Blinken has had a very warm, genuinely warm and enthusiastic reception in Berlin, Paris, and now Rome. All of the people that he met with have said, we're so glad that America is back. And obviously sort of cordial and relaxed atmosphere to the visit. He just had a meeting with the new Israeli foreign minister, Lapid, who came to Rome expressly for that purpose. And they just had some remarks in front of the camera, and they stressed the enduring close U.S.-Israeli friendship, and Blinken pledged his commitment to Israeli security. But they both said that, you know, although we have the same goals, but we sometimes have different approaches about the best way to get there. And what they seemed to be referring to on that was the Iran nuclear deal, with a bit of a pointed remark from the new Israeli foreign minister, Lapid, saying, you know, on Iran, we think that the best results are achieved through diplomatic negotiations and not in press conferences. So I think it would seem that Blinken and Lapid are trying to get away and have a new start. You know, we had President Trump with his very close relationship with the former Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, and now trying to start a new chapter and a bit maybe less flashy, less dramatic chapter.
Cindy, you mentioned the warm welcome that Secretary Blinken has received during his time in Europe. I wanted to ask you, on Monday, he is beginning to meet with the foreign ministers of the G20, the group of 20. What does he hope to bring to that meeting?
Right. Well, the emphasis there is going to be the U.S. is really getting back in with both feet into multilateralism and multilateral institutions and trying to, you know, face problems like COVID-19, helping to get the world out of the pandemic and climate change, the serious threat of climate change. And of course, China is always on the agenda at these things. So I think Blinken is demonstrating, yes, the U.S. is one of the G20, and he's going to show up and be there in person for it.
You mentioned the notion that Blinken is there to send the message that America is back. Are there any other deliverables that the State Department has said that Blinken is trying to get out of this overseas trip?
I think, Steve, it's more of just what he's been emphasizing is, as I said, showing up and just the steady U.S. presence and serious diplomatic negotiations and working on very concrete and tangible measures, as they say, to improve the lives of average citizens in the countries, also with a view to countering authoritarianism and threats to democracy. So I think that it's just more no dramatic, flashy headlines, but more of the hard work of steady diplomacy on complicated issues.
Cindy Sain is VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent. She was speaking to me from Rome, Italy, where she's been traveling with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. On Friday, the World Health Organization called the Delta variant of the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 the most transmissible of the known variants.
Delta is the most transmissible of the variants identified so far. Has been identified in at least 85 countries and is spreading rapidly among unvaccinated populations. As some countries ease public health and social measures, we're starting to see increases in transmission around the world.
World Health Organization Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said that while new variants are expected and will continue to be reported, the world can prevent the emergence of variants by preventing transmission.
That makes it even more urgent that we use all the tools at our disposal to prevent transmission. The tailored and consistent use of public health and social measures in combination with equitable vaccination. This is why WHO has been saying for at least a year that vaccines must be distributed equitably to protect health workers and the most vulnerable.
Dr. Tedros said global leadership is failing to get adequate vaccine doses to those who need it. He added that it was not a hesitancy problem, but a supply problem. And in many low-income countries, and especially Africa, the situation is worrisome.
It's becoming so dangerous. And the difference now is between having a vaccine and not having a vaccine. The difference is between the haves and the have-nots, and which is now completely exposing the unfairness of our world, the injustice, the inequality. That's it. Let's face it.
Currently, the COVID-19 tracker at Johns Hopkins University in the United States counts nearly 181 million confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus, almost 4 million deaths, and just short of 1.9 billion vaccine doses administered. Britain has seen a peak in the number of new coronavirus infections, reaching levels not seen since February of this year. AP reporter Karen Chamas has that part of the story.
Over the past week, almost 100,000 people tested positive. That's a 50% increase from the week before. Government scientists consider the new strain to be 40 to 80% more transmissible than the previous dominant strain. It accounts for nearly all the new cases in the UK. Karen Chamas, London.
Infectious disease experts are considering whether Johnson & Johnson's one-dose coronavirus vaccine may require a booster shot from rival pharmaceutical companies to cope with the contagious Delta variant. Reuters' Matthew LaRotonda takes it from here.
The group includes Andy Slavitt, a former senior pandemic advisor to President Biden. Some of those experts say they've already given themselves a booster, despite a lack of data on whether it's safe to do so. Reuters spoke with Jason Gallagher, an infectious disease expert at Temple University, who combined his Johnson & Johnson shot with a dose of the Pfizer vaccine. He says he's concerned over studies from the United Kingdom that show single doses aren't as effective at fighting the Delta variant, which was originally found in India and has spread rapidly. At least half a dozen prominent experts say the issue needs to be addressed and quickly. The UK studies show that two doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech and AstraZeneca vaccines are significantly more effective against the Delta variant than one dose. The Moderna vaccine is also being trialed as a possible booster by the U.S. government.
Matthew LaRotonda reports for Reuters News. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. In Myanmar's second city of Mandalay on Friday, security forces fought with insurgents and seized what they called a large cache of weapons. The firefight comes as the country prepares to enter its fifth month of protests following the February 1st coup and saw the elected civilian leadership replaced by a military junta. Reporter Cape Diamond is in Yangon. Cape, can you kind of break down what the status of fighting between opposition groups is between themselves and the Burmese military? Because the International Crisis Group just released a report saying that it is entirely conceivable that the military junta could unleash its entire military force against civilians.
The Burmese military has been fighting, you know, against the ethnic armed groups, you know, since we have the independence in 1948. But in this time, this is the significant development in the country because, like, the young people and the students, they want to the ethnic armed control area, and they got the training, you know, from the organizations. And at the same time, you know, those activists, you know, the people and the students, they decided to take arm, and they said, oh, you know, they have their own armed force. I mean, it's not an armed force, but a group, like they call it People Defense Force, you know. So those People Defense Force, of course, it is actually under the command of the National Unity Government, which is the, we call it, you know, shadow government. And but at the same time, these PDF, they have their own, you know, small groups, you know, in different places. So that's why there was the fighting, you know, shooting with the military in Mandalay, you know, the ethnic area. The fightings are still happening, like Chin State, you know, in Gaya State. So this is a worrying situation for the people as well.
Speaking of worrying situations, as Myanmar enters its fifth month of protests following the coup, how are people looking towards the future?
The youth who are still in the, you know, urban area like Yangon, Mandalay, but they're also doing their, you know, their strategies, you know, going out on the street and protest. But of course, you know, we have the brutal crackdown on the protest, so they could only do the flash mob, you know, protest, you know, to remind the people that we are under the military regime. So speaking to the people, speaking to the youth, so they say that, you know, oh, they won't kneel under the boot of the military, you know. They say, oh, you know, we will never surrender. We will never go down, you know. So we will fight as long as we can, as much as we can. So this is the spirit of this young generation.
Cape Diamond reports from Yangon, Myanmar. According to activists, at least 877 people have been killed by government forces and more than 6,000 have been arrested since the coup. The junta disputes those numbers and says that they are actually much lower. On Friday, three aid workers from Medecins Sans Frontieres, or Doctors Without Borders, were found dead near their vehicle in Ethiopia's embattled Tigray region. For an update on what's been discovered since that grim discovery, I spoke with reporter Jonse Ayana in Addis Ababa. Junzi, what have we learned in the past few days since these three aid workers from Doctors Without Borders were killed?
These three workers were under providing humanitarian aid for Tigray in the area. So they lost the contact with the organizations or the MSF on Thursday afternoon. So on Friday in the morning, their vehicle found empty while their dead body found a few meters away from the car. While expressing their sadness, the MSF said, "No words can truly convey our sadness, shock, and outrage against this horrific attack." So the organization said, they condemn the attack and will be relentless in understanding about what happened to these workers. The Ethiopian government on its side said that frequently they were expressing or telling these humanitarian workers to not to work their own alone without the military personnel. So the area is really under the control or under the active operation of TPLF forces. So the government said the killing was made by irresponsible group that he called the TPLF group.
So the government is blaming the deaths on the TPLF. Has anyone claimed responsibility for the deaths of these three Doctors Without Borders aid workers, or has the TPLF made any kind of statement following the discovery of the deaths?
As I have reviewed several medias around the region, no one cites the quote or the opinion of those groups, like whether they claim the government did that or they confirm we did so. So I didn't find any facts about this question for this timing.
How are people responding to the news that came out Friday about these deaths?
The situation in Tigray, most recently, especially this week, there is some security problem that the government is also taking some actions to control the problem, and also all organizations in the world or global organizations like this EU, US, and African Union are just expressing their feeling. The community in Ethiopia, the Ethiopian peoples are also expressing their sadness because the killing is really horrific and heart-touching.
Reporter Junzi Ayana is in Ethiopia's capital of Addis Ababa. As the United States continues to draw down its troops in Afghanistan, the Taliban have intensified battlefield attacks against government forces, capturing more territory. VOA Dairy Service reporter Sheila Nouri spoke with Ryan Crocker, a former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, about the unfolding situation.
Let me be clear here. Those were never peace talks. When President Trump initiated those talks in Doha, it was between the Taliban and the Americans, with the government of Afghanistan not present. That had been a long-standing demand of the Taliban, always ready to talk to the U.S., but not to what they labeled a puppet regime. So these were talks about peace, and the later introduction of Afghan officials to the talks didn't really change the dynamic. So talks like these are going to produce nothing good for the people of Afghanistan themselves. And obviously now the Taliban has no interest in talking further, canceled their participation in the Istanbul discussion. They are interested now in gaining ground, not in making peace.
So what is concerning for you regarding Afghanistan's situation? Do you believe Taliban has the ability to topple the Afghan government and regain the control of the country once again, like 90s?
It's very hard to say, but it is extremely worrisome. They certainly have the power to plunge the country into another phase of a civil war, if you will. And we could be seeing violent instability and unrest. We're already seeing it as the Taliban tries to advance into areas they have not previously held. Can that bring the government down? I mean, I have no way of knowing. I have watched with great admiration the courage and tenacity of the Afghan security forces and resisting efforts by the Taliban, it is going to get harder. It is not just our forces that are withdrawing, our contractors are withdrawing as well. They maintain, for example, the Afghan Air Force's aircraft, fixed wing and helicopter. Well, when those contractors leave, the government of Afghanistan loses the capability to maintain those airframes, which have been essential in the ground forces posture. So part of what you're seeing, I think, what looks like a successful Taliban advance against retreating Afghan troops is not exactly that. Without air support, a number of forward positions are going to have to be abandoned. It's a tactical necessity. It doesn't mean that that somehow the Taliban have turned into the strongest army in the world. It's not that at all. The maintenance of these forward posts was dependent on air support. If the air support goes, these positions are going to have to be abandoned.
That was former U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan, Ryan Crocker, speaking to VOA Dari service reporter Gila Nouri. U.S. President Joe Biden said on Friday that Afghans are going to have to decide their future. He said this after meeting with Afghanistan's President Ashraf Ghani. He also said that the two countries would continue a sustained partnership, but didn't elaborate on what that may entail. In a statement released by the U.S. Pentagon by its spokesperson on Sunday evening, U.S. President Joe Biden ordered forces to conduct defensive precision airstrikes against facilities used by Iran-backed militia groups in the Iraq-Syria border region. Kirby went on to say that the targets were selected because the facilities are utilized by Iran-backed militias that are engaged in unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAV attacks, against U.S. personnel and facilities in Iraq. Additional details are available at voanews.com.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists theorize that some 13.8 billion years ago, the universe began to form after the Big Bang. It's generally thought that the universe was dark for its first several hundred million years. A study led by researchers at University College London and the University of Cambridge proposes the first stars and galaxies began to form 250 to 300 million years after the Big Bang, during a period they call the Cosmic Dawn. Using data from the Hubble and Spitzer space telescopes, the researchers studied a few galaxies that formed when the universe was only about 550 million years old. The study also suggests NASA's new James Webb Space Telescope, set to launch in November, will be so responsive that it will allow a look further back in time to watch the birth of the first galaxies. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. UN independent expert on protection against violence and discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, Victor Madrigal Borlos, is calling for the global elimination of laws that criminalize same-sex unions by 2030. His report has been submitted to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein has that story.
Currently, 69 countries criminalize homosexuality or some form of gender identity. Nearly half are in Africa. Among them are a handful of countries that apply the death sentence for same-sex sexual acts. They include Brunei, Iran, Mauritania, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, and northern Nigeria. UN independent expert Victor Madrigal Borlos says as of today, 2,000 million people live in criminalized environments. He says there is no justification under international human rights law for maintaining criminalized legislation in relation to sexual orientation or gender identity.
My work has produced abundant evidence to the effect that these criminalizing provisions, even when they are not applied, they create a context that is hostile to the existence of LGBT persons and that is also conducive to blackmail and to significant violence affecting the everyday lives of these persons.
Madrigal Borlo notes some countries have taken measures to dismantle homophobic laws. He notes the extraordinary action taken by India's Supreme Court, which by the stroke of a pen freed more than 1 billion people from the threat of imprisonment based on their sexual orientation. He says other countries that have decriminalized their legislation against homosexuality include Botswana, Trinidad and Tobago, Belize, Mozambique, and Angola. Madrigal Borlo is concerned at the adoption of legislation by countries that limit the rights and freedoms of LGBTQ people. He is critical of the law passed by Hungary earlier this month, banning educational materials and programs for children that allegedly promote homosexuality and transgender identity.
I see nothing in the needs of a democratic society that would justify limiting that freedom. And this is the basis for my concern, as I expressed it to the Hungarian state already months ago, when this legislation began to take shape under that public policy.
On the contrary, the UN independent expert says comprehensive sexual and gender education in schools will likely lead to reduced levels of violence and discrimination based on gender identity and sexual orientation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And finally, a large newly restored area of the Colosseum, which used to be the underground backstage of the ancient Roman amphitheater, is now accessible to the public for the very first time. Sabrina Castelfranco rounds us out.
A team of more than 80 experts, including archaeologists, engineers, and restorers, worked on the Colosseum's hypogeum for 2 years. The project was the second phase in a major restoration of the iconic landmark that began in September 2013. Funding was provided by Diego de la Valle's Todd's Fashion Group. At the time, de la Valle pledged 25 million euros for the ambitious and complicated feat. Speaking at the opening of the hypogeum, de la Valle expressed satisfaction at what has been achieved so far for a monument that the whole world loves. He also praised the decision that allowed the public and private sectors to come together for a good cause. Alfonsina Russo, director of the Archaeological Park of the Colosseum, said a monument within a monument has now been fully restored and reopened. She said the restoration of the hypogeum was very complex, adding that each stone here is a witness of everything that occurred under the great arena of the Colosseum from its inauguration in AD 80 to its final performance in AD 523.
2000 anni fa, questo era il cuore dell'Anfiteatro Flavio.
Russo said 2,000 years ago, this was the heart of the Flavian Amphitheatre, where all the preparations for the shows took place. She added that this was the backstage where gladiators prepared for their challenges and where cages with wild animals were kept for the shows. A new 160-metre wooden walkway for visitors has now been constructed in the hypogeum, which provides access to parts of the monument which were not previously visible.
Un luogo con la presenza di tecnologie avanzate per l'epoca.
Russo explained that this 15,000 square meter area was filled with technology advanced for its time, with mobile platforms and wooden elevators that allowed the animals and performers out onto the arena so that they could join the combat action. There was also a special water system which filled the arena with water for naval battles, normally for the grand finale of the shows at the Colosseum. In the first phase of the works, the northern and southern facades of the Colosseum were cleaned, damaged mortar in arches was replaced, and the monument was fitted with new gates. The third phase, soon to be launched, will involve the restoration of galleries, the creation of a completely new visitor centre, and a new lighting system. Another project approved for the Colosseum involves installation of a high-tech retractable stage, expected to be operational by 2023, and which is likely to bring back cultural events and performances. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, Thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay up to date with world news and events 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, your desktop computer, or any other electronic device to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great day.